My dear friends, throughout all the ages, men and women in distress or in anxiety of spirit have prayed either silently or vocally, "Return, O my soul, to your rest." I do not mean those men and women alone who were emotionally disturbed or sick of mind, whose mental conditions called for special clinical or medical treatment. I do not refer to those unfortunates who may have been suffering from some deep hidden hurt, some unrevealed traumata of the soul, which the skillful hand of a psychiatrist might guide into conscious awareness of the poisoned roots within, and so help to bring relief to the patient. No, I'm not thinking of those afflicted human beings. I'm thinking of normal men and women who are not victims of any malady of the mind or of the spirit, but who are victims, nonetheless, of much either continued or intermittent unrest and unhappiness. And our world is full of such people. People who, though sound of body and mind, and though well provided with the material things of life, with the necessities of life, do nevertheless sit, as it were, upon thorns, are disquieted within them, and bear the frequent brunt of tension and strain. And I sometimes read upon the lips of these distressed and distracted people, or in their puzzled and troubled eyes, I sometimes read the unspoken prayer, "Return, O my soul, to your rest." There are times when all of us are inclined to utter this prayer, which is found in the beautiful Psalm 116 of the Book of Psalms, "Shuvi nafshi limnuchoichi," "Return, O my soul, to your rest." For we are all human, and therefore we are all subject to all the predicaments of humanity. We are all hedged in and constrained by the inevitable limitations of life. We all experience at one time or another failure and frustration. We are all exposed to accidents and sickness and loss and bereavement, to all the scourges and the scars of life. "Man is born unto trouble," said Job, "as the sparks fly upward." No man moves steadily through a lifetime of unbroken serenity. Not all life is banqueting and minstrelsy. And there are some whose tears are their food day and night, as the psalmist says. There are others over whom all the waves and the billows of misfortune have swept. And there are those who walk the lonely road, who feel themselves forsaken and forgotten in a night without stars. Is there any wonder then if a prayer sometimes comes to the lips of such men and women, of all of us? Return, O my soul, to your rest. Now this disquietude of the soul, this dejection of the spirit, is a constant in human experience. And was known, of course, to the ancients as well as to modern men. Now, how did the wisest and noblest of them react to this? How did they surmount it? How did our forefathers of long ago, whose spiritual insights and whose spiritual sensitivity are recorded in our sacred scriptures, in our Bible, how did they confront these situations, these common, ever-present, ever-recurring human situations, which brought fears and distress and oftentimes desolation to their hearts? They knew, of course, our forefathers knew the human soul, although they had not developed any science of psychology or of psychiatry, nor were they acquainted with the solemn ritual of the confessional couch. But they knew that it was good for man to unburden himself when the load upon his heart was too heavy for him. And so they turned, not to the psychiatrist, but they turned to the invisible God and to his invisible presence and poured out their hearts to him whose ears were always attentive. They called upon him. O God, incline thine ear to me and hear my speech. Hat oznecha li, shema imrati. They felt confident, they felt assured that they could always call upon him. He would be waiting for them. One need never make an appointment with God. Heye li letzur ma'on, lavo tamid. Thou art unto me as a dependable refuge to whom I can always come. Lavo tamid. And they felt relief from despair. They felt refreshed and glad of heart when they could thus unburden themselves to their God. O hafti ki yishma Adonai et koli. I loved it when the Lord listened to my voice, when he inclined his ear to me whenever I called. And they confided to the listening ear of God all that was troubling them. All their dark and dread fears and their anxieties, all their heartaches, all their sorrows. The snares of death have encompassed me. The straits of the netherworld have taken hold of me. I suffer distress and anguish. O Lord, I beseech thee, deliver my soul. Malta nafshi. Return my soul to its rest. I am greatly afflicted, and men are all a vain hope. Call Adam Kosev. I cannot turn to them, but thou canst deliver my soul from death, mine eyes from tears, and my feet from stumbling. With thee I can walk confidently in the lands of the living. Etalech lefonai, lifnei Adonai, ve'artzot achayim. All this is found in one beautiful psalm, Psalm 116. And having confided the troubles and the secret burdens of his heart to his God, and in that very process of thus confiding, having reasserted and in a sense rediscovered his faith in him who is gracious and righteous and merciful, Hanun Adonai, Vitzadik, Veloeinu Merachem, and who is near unto all who call upon him, having confided in him, this sorely tried and confused and frightened man then was able to arise, as it were, from the invisible presence of God, the great comforter, reassured, strengthened, and his troubled soul at rest, saying, O Lord, I am thy servant. Thou hast loosed my bonds. Ano Adonai, ki ani avdecha, pitachta lemoserai. Thou hast loosened my bonds, the things which chained and fettered me, the things which troubled me. A sort of a religious psychiatry, unconscious, but tremendous. Faith in God, my dear friends, is the great loosener of bonds. It frees us all of all that binds and fetters and shackles us, of everything, whether it be the fear of life or the fear of death, whether it be fear of the power of others over us, or fear of lack of power within ourselves. Faith in God tends to clean and to clear our hearts, our overburdened, sorely tried hearts, of pride and anger and envy and lust of power and prestige and possessions, all of which feed the consuming fires which destroy our tranquility as well as our integrity. Faith in God brings the balm of life, the balm of resignation and of reconciliation to all human suffering. It was the great Hebrew poet Solomon Ibn Gabirol of Spain of the Middle Ages who said, poverty, sickness and terror are easier to bear with faith. Not that they do not exist, they exist, but they're easier to bear with faith. And the psalmist declared, I drink the cup of salvation, kos yeshuot esa, when I call upon the name of the Lord. The founder of the Hasidim, Israel Baal Shem Tov, an amazing personality in Jewish history. The founder of Hasidism, which was a movement in the 17th century, among our people, in Eastern Europe, which summoned men to a resurgence of faith and hope, of song and ecstasy, at the very time when the Jewish communities in Eastern Europe lay bleeding and broken as a result of the terrible Cossack uprisings of that period under Khmelnytsky, at a time when those communities were spiritually desolated by the appalling messianic fiasco of Shabbatai Tzvi, at that time, this man who founded this movement, calling upon the people to rekindle their spirit of hope, of faith, begin singing in the midst of their terrible afflictions. Israel Baal Shem Tov declared, when God wants to punish a man, he deprives him of his faith. Not of his wealth, not of his health. When God wants to punish a man, Israel Baal Shem Tov said, he deprives him of his faith. I'm afraid that many men and women today, many men and women among our own people, have been punishing themselves by emptying their lives of faith in God, of real faith in God. And they thus create a vacuum in their lives, which they then must fill with something else, with other categories of faith. Faith, for example, in the satisfactions which material things of life may bring them. Faith in the idols of wealth, of power, of position. Idols which simply crumble when evil befalls a man. There are those who have lost their faith in God because things did not turn out as they had hoped for and wished for. I think it was the Austrian author Schnitzler who once wrote, we know of some very religious people who came to doubt God when a great misfortune befell them, even though themselves were to blame for it. But we have never yet seen anyone who lost his faith because an undeserved fortune fell to his lot. There are those men and women whom the rabbis called Ktanei Emunah, men of little faith. Men of little faith. They said, he who has a piece of bread in his basket and asks, what will I eat tomorrow? Belongs to them who are of little faith. How many are there in our midst who have more, far more than a piece of bread in their basket? Who have cake and frosting for themselves and their families? How many of them are there in our midst who consume themselves and burn themselves out before they are 40 or 50 years old, trying to make sure that there will be not another piece of bread, but perhaps another $1 million in their basket tomorrow? What is really the faith of such people? What are they trying to prove to themselves or to others? What kind of a God are they worshiping? There are those who have lost their faith in God on intellectual grounds, they believe. Science has not proved the existence of God. And therefore, faith in God is unreal and unnecessary. But faith is not a matter of knowledge. We are justified in believing when our knowledge is even incomplete. The truly religious man has never maintained that he knew God. Quite the contrary. The most profound religious minds of all times have always insisted that God is unknown. He is el mystater, the hidden God, beyond the ken of man and beyond man's grasp and comprehension. But it should be remembered that science has not disproved or undermined a single religious truth. Science has not demonstrated scientifically that all life is at bottom physical. It has not explained life and consciousness and mind and will in terms of matter in motion. It has not proved that man is mere clay worked upon by external forces, a mere automaton reacting to external stimuli. Science has not proved that nothing of a qualitative nature distinguishes man from other living animals. Quite the contrary. It is becoming increasingly evident to the scientific seeker after truth that the hypothesis of a creative intelligence is the only hypothesis which can account for the facts of existence. Science and religion are not in contradiction. They supplement one another. Science is the response to the human need for knowledge and power. Religion is the response to the human need for hope and security, dignity in life. The responsible scientist will not make any pronouncements on the basis of facts gathered in his scientific laboratory. He will not make any pronouncements concerning the origin and destiny of human life, or on the purposes of creation, or on man's place in the scheme of things. Science offers you no philosophy of life, but mankind needs a philosophy of life which is congenial to man's existence on earth, and to his strivings, and to human idealism. Man is so constituted that the demands and the emergencies of his life compel him to a belief in a God, creator, ruler, friend, the architect of justice and love, and their sure and ultimate defense. And this faith, uncontradicted by science, yet responsive to fundamental human needs like human needs of hunger, a physical hunger, this faith, when active and vital, masters man's doubts, strengthens his heart, gives him confidence to face all the possible sorrows and disillusionments of his life. A true man of faith believes, even when he cannot see all things clearly, which man will never see. In a cellar in the city of Cologne, where Jews hid from the Nazis, they discovered after the war an inscription on its walls. I believe in the sun, even when it is not shining. I believe in love, even when not feeling it. I believe in God, even when he is silent. Now this is faith. This is the song in the night. This is the immortal hope, the resurgent hope, the undefeated hope of man. I am fond of repeating the anecdote which is recorded by Solomon Ibn Verga in his account of the expulsion of the Jews from Spain in 1492, a book called Shevet Yehudah, the Rod of Judah, the tribe of Judah, which was visited by the rod of affliction. It tells the story of the refugees as they were compelled to flee from Spain. Those who lost their faith remained in Spain, abandoned their faith. Those who had faith fled the country. A shipload of such Jewish refugees from Spain was swept by a plague. And the captain of the ship cast everybody ashore upon a barren and uninhabited coast. And most of the unfortunate refugees perished from hunger and exposure. Some of them pressed on desperately to find some human habitation. Among them was a man, his wife, and their two children. They struggled on through the barren waste until the mother, exhausted, fainted and died. And the man then carried his children in his arms and upon his shoulders until he too fell down and fainted from hunger and exhaustion. And when he came to, he discovered that his two children had died. The man then arose and said, Master of the universe, much hast thou done to make me forsake my faith. Know, however, that in spite of all, I am a Jew and I shall remain a Jew, and nothing that thou hast brought upon me or art likely to bring upon me will make any difference. He then covered the bodies of his dead children with earth and scrub and walked on into the wilderness to find a human abode. These are the words recorded by Ibn Verga in the Shevet Yehudah. This is faith. And here too, in this bitter cry of this tortured Spanish Jewish refugee, you may find a key to the mystery of Jewish survival. This is faith. And when Job, the utterly righteous man, honored by all and prosperous, when Job is suddenly bereft of family and possessions and is broken in body by a loathsome disease and cast out as a leper beyond the city walls, there to scrape his tortured body with a potsherd? When Job, in the darkness and the chaos and the bitterness of his soul, nevertheless persists in his faith and cries out, even though he slay me, yet will I hope. Ein yikteleni lo ayachel. That, my friends, is faith. Now, there are not many, of course, who are capable of such faith, so supremely tested in the crucible of suffering, tribulation. But, my dear friends, all men and women may find what you may call preventive medicine for the unexpected hurts and aches of their spirit. All men and women may find a measure of peace and rest of soul in the midst of all the tumult and the turmoil, the changing fortunes and the shifting tides of life, in faith. Ma tishtochachi nafshi, uma tehemi. Why art thou cast down, O my soul? And why art thou disquieted within thee? Hochili l'Elohim, hope in God. The silent stream of God is always there, all around us. Drink of it. This is how God helps you. When you drink of the stream of faith in him. Drink of it, and your soul will be refreshed, and your soul will find rest.